As I look around the church, I see people sitting there that really could be up here with me, because I know there's at least two of them that were deacons at the same time as I was, and sat in on the meetings when all that we're celebrating today began. When I was asked to do this, I wondered whether or not I ought to write it all down. The problem is, when I write things down, I normally either read too quickly or too slowly or miss a line, so I thought, no, we'll have a go without writing it down. So if I make any slip-ups about events, I'm sure that you'll either not know or you'll forgive me. I did wonder about whether I ought to have a title for what I've got to say. It's not going to be a sermon, I promise you. No text, no like that. And I thought, well, yeah, there are two titles that I could have said. I was basing my little talk on this afternoon. The first one, and I'll tell you the first one now, I'll tell you the other one I've got right at the end. The first one that I thought of was this. It was from Matthew chapter 19 and verse 26, "With God, all things are possible." I go back now to when, not long after I first came to the church with my wife, we hadn't been here many years when I was invited to become a deacon here. And after that, I remember we were told that we needed to smarten up the old building. And so we had paint brushes and shovels and cleaning stuff. And sure enough, with help from the council, who gave us a certain amount of money, and money that the congregation were able to put together, we started to smarten up the building. I have to smile, on one occasion I was working on the outside of the old building. I was putting some guttering up, and I heard someone shout my name, and I went over, and it's a friend of mine who lived not too far away, and he said, "I thought this place had closed 9 years ago." Well, that was the impression it might have given. Unfortunately, he never came inside to find out that it wasn't true. It was as much alive then as it had ever been. Sure enough, it certainly smartened the church up. But like we've heard what Paul Brown said, it was still an old building. And I remember on the 14th of December 1974, we had a church meeting. And in that church meeting, Paul was saying how hard work people had worked on the church and made it look smarter. But really, we really ought to think about another building. I don't know what people felt when he was talking like that, but with God, all things are possible. And we never expected to be made possible in the way, of course, that it was. It wasn't long after that we heard that Tesco were going to build a new a store at the siding on the old factory site. And one of the first things that I can remember happening was that they came to the church and asked if they could put some ground anchors under the church. And this was to hold up this big concrete wall that was going to be built to form an underground car park. Well, none of us in the church really knew much about ground anchors or whether ground underneath was suitable, and we explained this to the builders, Trantums and to Tesco's, and they said, "Well, you get an engineer and we'll pay for him and see what he has to say." And the engineer's report came back and said, "Don't let them do it, because the ground underneath is not suitable." So we told them that, and they said, "Well, we're alright, we've got other plans, another way of doing it." And our engineer said, "Well, you'd like to see those plans." And sure enough, they let him look at them. And he came to the church and said, "I don't like it. What I suggest you do is that you get a camera, invite Trantum's and Tesco's representatives to come round, and we will take photographs to make sure that everything stays as it is at the moment. And that's what they did. I remember Paul Brown and one or two others went round and they took photographs. And so Trentham started digging. It was quite a depth, but as they began to dig, and many of you will know, that in the far corner of the church, there appeared cracks over the window. Of course, we went round. I say we, I'm talking to the church. No, I wasn't one of them. We went round and had a word with the builders and said, oh, don't worry. Anything damage that we do, we'll put it right. Unfortunately, as they continued digging, the cracks got bigger. And caused great concern, of course, because of the danger, not only to the church falling, but of course, the people that were inside it. And so, the church got their lawyer to go, and he got an injunction to stop them from building. Of course, that was a blow to them. And they no doubt had a finishing date for this building, but it wasn't going to get finished unless they could carry on digging. And so they came to the church and made one or two suggestions as to what they would do. And the first suggestion that was made, that they would buy the land from us and we could go somewhere else and build another church. And that was, of course, flatly refused. They then came back again and said that what they would do, they would buy the land, they'd knock the church down, they'd build a block of offices or shops, and they would incorporate a church in that building. But I remember the deacons and the trustees, well, the deacons and trustees were the same people at the time, said, well, look, we will lose our identity. People will see a block of offices or a block of shops. They won't see the church as they see it at the moment. And of course, they turned that down. Eventually, Tesco decided that they were going to challenge this injunction. And indeed they did, and they went to the High Court in London and challenged the injunction. The judge absolutely scathed them and threw them out and said, you're very lucky that the church don't turn on you, in other words, you know, for what you're doing to their building and the inconvenience that you're causing, the problems that you're causing. And so they came back and they said, look, what we'll do, we'll knock your church down, we'll put our retaining wall up, and then we'll build you a new church. Well, that sounded good. And that was accepted. In the meantime, of course, we had to find somewhere for our services. We used the Mitchell Memorial Theatre. I can remember having a Sunday school prize giving there one Sunday. And we also used one or two other church, and we also used the Scout Hall, which was just across the road there. Eventually, Trentham's put up a big building, a portable building, that we could use for a church until this place was ready for us. There was one or two things that happened in that building over there, the wooden building, that made me smile as I was thinking about them. But I also thought about the four men who were trustees and deacons who had taken a load of this responsibility upon their shoulders, along with Paul Brown, of course. And I thought really that I ought to mention them this afternoon. The first one that I would mention is Joe Thorley. Joe was our organist, and he loved to play the organ, and it was lovely to hear him play, and I can always remember Joe's lovely smile. And I said one or two things happened across him there that make me laugh when I think about it. And if you've got the book that Gervais wrote, and if you haven't, then I suggest you buy it, because not that I've got a commission on it or anything like that, but he explains a lot of these things in far more detail than I'm doing now. But we were having our Sunday school lessons one day, one Sunday, and I'd got a group of lads with in my class, I remember, up in the corner. And we were going along very nicely, and all of a sudden, fire extinguisher let off, the one with the powder gun. The whole church building was, well, you could hardly see for this dust that was going all over the place. Of course, nobody had done it, nobody had admitted it. And it was a year or two later before I found out actually who did it. But I'm keeping that to myself. We had a group that cleaned the church the best we could, regular evening service. And Joe came in to play the piano that we had there. And as he was playing the piano, there was dust rising between the keys. I don't know if we ever tried singing and laugh at the same time, but we tried our best that night. And the other thing I remember about Joe is that if you go outside there, you see the lawn. And Joe loved his garden. And Joe put that lawn down. In fact, I helped him to do it 40 years ago. And Percy's still mowing it and making a good job of it. And then there was Fred Dulstraw. Fred was a lovely man. He used to use his vehicle to fetch and carry people to and from church. If there were meetings anywhere, then they would go in Fred's vehicle. And he loved to sing. And quite often when we were singing our hymns in the church here, he would sing the last verse or the last chorus again. Loved to hear Fred sing. And he also went over to Fole on, I think, every other month to take the service over there. And then there was Phil Frost. Phil, he was the one who stood and invited people in and brought them in and gave them the hymn books. And in those days, the church was usually full to overflowing, and Phil used to come down and find a seat for you and help you to settle in. But there's one thing that I really have to smile again when I think about Phil Frost and his wife Gladys. When the I hope I'm alright telling this story.
Yes.
It's not rude, but when the building was more or less completed, the ladies of the church were being given a tour of the building, and they went into the gents' toilets, and on the walls, of course, there were urinals. And Gladys looked at that and she said, "You'll have to lower one of them for our Phil. He's only got short legs." I'm not sure if it was ever lowered, but anyway. And then there was Arthur Pinsters. Arthur, well, the only thing I can ever remember about Arthur was that when we had our deacon's meetings, he always used to sit by the fire, the side of the fire there, in the manse. And I remember the first time that I went to a deacon's meeting, and Arthur was there, of course. And we not long started when suddenly his eyes closed. I thought, oh, he fell asleep. And they were closed for quite a while, until there was a question asked. And, you know, Arthur knew the answer, and he'd been listening all that time. I thought he was asleep, but no. He rested in his eyes, I think it was, he called it. But four men, all very, very different, and yet in one way, very much the same. They loved the Lord, and they were willing to remortgage their houses, their houses if necessary, in case when that injunction was challenged, the church lost. But of course, they didn't lose. But I've thought ever since, what a wonderful example of their faith in the Lord. And of course, the Lord didn't fail them. I've got other memories of the building going up, when it was being furnished, and everybody had an opportunity, different members, different parts of the church. And here we are now, in a building which 40 years ago God provided for us. And I said I've got one more thing, one more title if necessary for this, what I have to say, and it's this: God moves in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. It's amazing what you can get from Tesco when the Lord's on your side.